Welcome to the Home Building Hero, where we help you become the hero of your new home by providing you all the information that you need. No matter if you're an industry pro, you're building, or you're buying, we got you covered here at the Home Building Hero. We're coming to you live today from the LP Studios here in Wisconsin. I'm your host, David Bellman, president of Bellman Homes. Thank you for tuning in today. Good day, everybody. Today we are going to be talking about the five things to beware of when signing an agreement to purchase a home. I know it's exciting. You're about ready to buy that home. Maybe there's a competitive situation. You got to jump into things really quickly, but you got to be really careful because if you're not, you can cause yourself some grief or maybe put yourself in a really bad situation. So here are five tips that you guys are going to need. First, warning sign, I guess I should say. Asking for too large of a deposit. Now, it's very customary to take a deposit whenever you're purchasing anything. It's also very customary to have even a non-refundable deposit in some cases, especially if you're doing a bigger project and you want a lot of customizations, or you're buying a house that's already built, a new home, and you want to make some modifications to it. It's perfectly acceptable to have to prepay for those things. That's pretty normal. But what you want to watch out for is asking for way too large of a deposit for an ordinary transaction. So example, you know, you're going to buy a new home. It's already there. It's already done. You're just going to close on it. You know, if they're going to want, you know, a huge deposit, something like 30% down or more to buy an existing home, that seems kind of excessive, especially beware if they want that deposit made directly to their company. Because, of course, if something happens and you weren't able to buy that, more than likely they need that cash right now and you may not be able to get it back. Typically, deposits, earnest money deposits especially, are made out typically to a trust account. And that's a neutral account and it's audited. And the money has to go in and come out within a certain amount of time. Otherwise, you can face some legal penalties. So you'd want to be careful of that, especially if the check goes directly to the builder. Now, we've done situations ourselves where we've taken larger deposits. When someone wants to custom build on one of our sites or something like that, we do take a larger payment structure for that because we're actually building it like a spec home. And then they're closing on it at the end. So the last thing we want to do is, you know, build something that's got all sorts of customizations in it and have it go out back on the market. So that's somewhat normal, but would be done in a little bit different manner. Typically, it's stretched out over some periods and just kind of helps not only with cash flow, but then also to make sure that the buyer is completely locked in. So we're not, you know, building a home that costs, you know, $700,000-$800,000 and, you know, they can walk away for $1,000 or something like that. That's not a situation anyone wants to get into. So beware of those large deposits. Remodeling, a lot of times they are going to take a larger deposit for that as well, and they would use some of that money to buy the materials. It's a little different situation with remodeling, and the reason for that is, you know, if you're buying a house from a builder and they already own the lot and everything like that, there's some different leverage there. But when you are, you know, a builder working as a remodeler for a client, it's a very different situation because, you know, you as the homeowner own that home and there's really, you know, you have access to the home, everything else. So, you know, what's to stop you as the homeowner from locking the builder out 3/4 of the way through the project with very little deposit and then refusing to pay for a while? Granted, you've already put yourself into a bad spot because you're going to probably get a lien on your home. But that's why typically remodelers will take a larger deposit right away because, A, they're going to order materials and there just isn't as much leverage there. So that's a different situation and something to be aware of. But definitely ask some more questions if a really large deposit comes out of the conversation. Typically for new construction, like if you're already furnishing the lot and stuff like that, it should probably be a single digit percentage. You know, and I probably in the past probably haven't taken enough deposit, But there's costs that are incurred right away when you start building a home, from the builder end, you know, whether it's drawing plans and then hiring surveyors and all those kind of things. That all adds up rather quickly, especially as you get to a permit. You could be in for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 easily. If it's a custom home, it could be $40,000, you know, by the time you get all the plans drawn and everything. So beware of those high deposits. Next thing to be aware of when signing a building agreement is outdated clauses on contracts. So what you want to do is kind of proof through the paperwork. And if you see something that's, you know, referencing something pretty old, an older law or something like that, you may want to look into it. I've had situations too where this could also go to, you know, using old forms. And, you know, a lot of times builders just don't update their paperwork as quickly as they need to. Now, the exception to this is what we call pro forma documents. So we have these, and I've had a couple of situations where I've had a realtor come to me and say, "You're not using the most up-to-date, you know, condo offer to purchase form." And I'm like, "Yes, that's correct. But I'm using a pro forma one that my attorney created." And so when you're using something that an attorney has created, you know, you don't necessarily have to use the newest, latest one from your association. So there's some caveats to that, but definitely watch out for old, outdated clauses or outdated language in paperwork. You know, there's times where something becomes a law and then it, for whatever reason, gets stricken off, maybe when a different administration comes in and you got things that are still, you know, in the paperwork. You know, every couple of years, builders should be going through and updating their paperwork, their offers and things like that, and taking out those kind of things or adding and adjusting those. So if it's very old, outdated paperwork, you definitely need to be careful there, because maybe the builder isn't really watching what's going on there. And if they're not watching their paperwork, they're probably not watching as carefully what's going on their job sites. All right, the third thing you need to be aware of when you're signing a building agreement is not having an agreement or not putting it in writing. That can be a very dangerous thing for all involved. Every single thing that affects the transaction, anything that involves pricing, a change, key dates, that should all be reduced to writing in some form or format. So you should always be aware of someone that's like, "Yeah, you know, I know, yeah, I'm a handshake guy." No, beware of that. Especially if you're transferring dollars for something, make sure you have it in writing. It doesn't have to be this perfect clean form every single time. I mean, there's been cases where something has to happen in a job site and you write it on a piece of paper and you both sign it. That's technically a legal agreement. That's a binding agreement at that point. It doesn't have to be typed out necessarily, but do everything in writing. There's been a lot of times where we've had like an item that wasn't even a charge, a no charge thing, and we still put it in writing because, you know, things happen. And you know, unfortunately, being a builder, I've seen it on the other end where, you know, the one time I did do that and we made a change with the client and it wasn't a charge, and I even had the carpenter there and everything, and we were all talking through it. "This is how we're going to do it." Yeah. "No, we're good. We like this." Then we went and did the work. And then over the weekend, husband and wife went back out there and said, "Yeah, no, we don't like this. We want you to redo it at your charge." And we're like, "Wait a minute. No, now you got to pay for it if we change it." And they're like, "Well, show us where it's in writing." And we're like, "Well, we technically don't have it in writing." And so at that point, that was a very good learning lesson for me. Even though we had everybody there and it was like everybody was on the same page at the time, people can change their minds. It can happen to me as a builder. It can happen to you as a consumer. So get it in writing. We have a completely different process for how we handle those kind of changes. We do it electronically through our change order system, and it's never happened again and probably won't ever happen again. So get things in writing, any kind of promises that are made, anything that's supposed to be included. I had this the other day too. I mean, we bought a vehicle. It was a used vehicle. And they're like, "Oh yeah, you get, you know, you bring it here, you know, you get the warranty thing with it." It's like, okay. And then it was like, "Oh yeah. And you know, the first two oil changes are free." And it's like, okay, cool. You know, and then of course went, you know, 3.5 months later to go get the oil change, and they wouldn't give it to me for free. They're charging me for it. I'm like, no, it was part of my deal. But I'm like, I didn't have it anywhere in writing. And I don't know if that was just something to kind of close the deal. And I could have made, you know, made something difficult, went to the manager that promised that he was still there and said, hey, you know, you told this to me, what the heck? But I just paid for it. But again, those are those kind of things where it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And it's not certainly not a good experience that you want to offer your customer when that happens. So make sure you get everything in writing. Don't be afraid to ask for that, whether it's just noting it. Like if you've got a sheet that you're incorporating in your paperwork with all your changes, have that noted right in there. If there's something that they're going to do, additional or extra, or whatever that is, special date or deadline, if there's a promotion, make sure that's referenced somewhere in your paperwork. So that, you know, a lot of times when you're building a house, it could be a year later when you finally settle up on everything and those things get forgotten or lost. And yeah, you don't want to get burned by that. And that's probably the biggest, most important thing that I can tell you of advice when buying a home. Get it in writing. All right. The fourth thing that you want to be aware of is unclear wording or gray areas in your paperwork. So unclear wording, I have to work with salespeople on this all the time, and it's a problem throughout the industry. But sometimes people just are lazy with their descriptions or their writing. This can be on all sorts of things, contingencies or changes on home. Like sometimes people are like, trying to think of a really good example off the cuff here, but change flooring from LVP to wood flooring, and that's the line item. It's like, okay, well, where? Now, if you really think about that, does it mean all? It's like, you know, if you're a consumer, you're going to be like, yeah, I want the entire house, everywhere there's LVP to be wood floor now, and maybe they only meant to do that in, say, a family room, or maybe you meant to do that in the kitchen dinette, but not the other area that's separated off. So make sure that your wording is very clear. If you see something where it doesn't sound right, you probably, you know, you're probably wrong with it, or it's probably going to be misconstrued. So what you have to do is take a step back from it and say, if someone else that was not involved with this transaction read this, would they know exactly what's going to happen? I always kind of like to use the who, what, where, when, how. When I'm challenging something like that, is it okay? Who's providing it? Where is it going? How's it going in? And, you know, if there's a time frame for it, obviously put that in there as well. And that's the same for contingencies as well. So, for example, like let's say you're buying a lot and it doesn't have some sort of testing that you need, some soils or things like that. You may want to make the offer subject to you getting one of these tests. And then you have to start doing all these other things with it. Like, okay, the buyer's going to pay for the test, let's say. But you as a seller are going to give me 2 weeks to get it done, and we'll restore the property back to acceptable condition. And if for some reason the soil isn't allowing me to get a certain type of basement in or a certain type of project that I want to do in there, I can cancel agreement and I get my money back. Like that's a good contingency because it's covering all the different parts there. It's very clear what's all supposed to happen. So yes, it takes more time to create this, and you've got to think a little bit through the different situations. But if you do that, then when those situations come up, you have a clear action. It's in writing. Everyone's got, basically bound to that agreement. If you're just like, this is subject to a soil test. Okay, well, that's not a good contingency. Here's why. First of all, when do you have to get that soil test? Do you have to get it the day before closing? What happens if the soil test isn't good? What happens if, who's paying for that soil test? What happens if, they go in and it's a muddy day and they dig up the yard, put ruts all over it, and then you leave it and then you don't buy the lot. Now the seller's got these big ruts that have dried up and now you got to regrade the front of the lot. I mean, a lot of gray areas in that situation, so you got to be really careful with it. So avoid unclear wording or gray areas. So read everything, and anytime there's something described, make sure that someone else that's outside the transaction can understand it. Whether it's, let's say, your spouse who's maybe not as involved with it, or something happens to you and someone else has got to get the house finished up, can they read it? Can an attorney read it? You name it, you want to make sure that that writing is very clear. And then the last thing to be aware of when you're signing a building agreement is inconsistencies in the paperwork. So, and this can also be inconsistencies in policy versus what's in writing. So, for example, easy example for you would be, let's say you're working with a salesperson and they're like, they keep telling you, you know, house will be done. We'll get the house done in 5 months, let's just say. Yep, the house will be built in 5 months. Then you get to your paperwork, and then the paperwork says something like 9 months to build the home. And they're like, no, that's what we leave in there. But they keep telling you 5 months. Now, are they telling you that just to get you to sign because no one else will promise that? Or are they, you know, what are they telling you? And then if for some reason, if they keep telling you 5 months, but they bring out paperwork that says 9 months, okay, fine. Will you change that to 5 months like you promised? If they're not willing to, well, then you have a decision to make. Either A, they're not being truthful with you, or B, they've got other reasons why they want to put that extra time in there. But if they keep promising you a certain completion time, then you may just want to put that in writing as they've promised it to you. So beware those inconsistencies in the paperwork. Other examples of like inconsistencies are, again, a lot of times with contingencies, where you're, you know, the easiest one is to look at something like financing contingencies or things like that with your paperwork. And what I recommend with that is, sometimes you have situations where it's like they put the loan commitment. That's the date that you need to get all your documentation from the lender, to the seller by, and the loan contingency is basically like expires the day before closing. That's not realistic in the real world. That would be an inconsistent thing because how would you even be able to close the very next day if you just find out the night before? You still need to create the closing statement. You got to do the prorations. You got to make sure that, you know, the bank and the title company have somebody available. That's an inconsistency in the paperwork. So you want to make sure things are well thought out, that there's plenty of time in between to make sure everything works right. So, you know, it's the same for other contingencies like inspection contingency or testing contingency for radon or something like that. You don't want that to be expired right at the last minute, 11th hour, or some of those contingencies, if it requires you as a buyer to spend a bunch of money, you may want to get through the more basic ones first. So for example, maybe you've got to, you know, make sure that you can officially afford that home from your lender before you start spending money paying for tests. So maybe you want to, you know, get that loan commitment first, then you want the expiration date on your radon test, and then moving forward that way so you're not spending a ton of money on something that you're not ultimately going to be able to buy. So be careful about that. Be careful about the sequencing of your contingencies. Make sure that they make sense for you so you're just not wasting money, because, you know, especially if you're buying maybe more of an existing home and you're in a competitive situation, you want to keep getting accepted offers and having them fall apart and spending a bunch of money on things, on homes that you never end up buying. So be very careful about that. So there you have it. There are five things to be aware of when you're signing an agreement: too large deposits, outdated clauses or old forms, not having anything in writing, unclear wording or gray areas, and of course, inconsistencies in the paperwork. If you can iron out those things, you're going to have a much better transaction when you purchase your home.
Once again, thank you for tuning in to The Home Building Hero, broadcasting live from the Bellman Home Studio. If you haven't already, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any future content. Until next time, I'm David Bellman, signing off.